Draft podcast. I'm your host, Dalton Miller, joined as always by my co-host, Corey Kinnon. And we have a draft or draft today. It's been a couple of weeks. We didn't do one last week because we were building out a bunch of Frankensteins. We got done the offensive side of the ball. We're doing a draft or draft. We're going to get to the defensive side of the ball, but we are excited to talk about some takes today. But first, I have to ask, Corey. We're going to get into it quickly here within a minute of starting the podcast. But how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm loving life right now. We're 2 weeks out from the main event here. It's the best time of the season. I've already gotten ahead of the curve a little bit on some.
I was going to say it's the best time of the season. Well. I've moved on to 2026.
I've already got like 7 full profiles charted on 2026 summer scouting guys. So, I've kind of gotten ahead, but hey, the grind never stops. But I love Thursday night. Like Thursday night is just such a fun event for as long as it drags on and how much I'm gonna have to work on Thursday night. But like, I don't care. It's so much fun. It's so much fun.
Yeah. For me, the fun is the next day. I love Friday, man. Friday's where, and Saturday is like really where the scouts shine. But Friday for me is the part of the NFL draft that I love. Let's get into it here. Part of going on day two or on Friday is being a day two player. And this player we've talked about very, very adamantly is not a round one player, not a round one quarterback, but in a quarterback class that is devoid of talent. Jalen Milroe is going to go in the first round. Corey, daft or draft this?
Dude, I think I'm gonna draft it.
When I saw this on the sheet, it blew my mind. I thought, what the heck are you talking about? Explain to the people kind of what spawned this idea.
Well, yeah. So first, Sunday night, it came out that Jalen Milroe had accepted an invitation to the NFL draft green room. And this had come after, you know, the NFL obviously is in Green Bay this year. Not a very big stadium, or not a very big host.
Not a city. Very big place, period.
Not a very big place. They're holding the draft inside the stadium because that's the only place to hold it in Green Bay. Not a lot of room in the green room. So they said that they're going to make a concerted effort not to have people in the green room who like are going to have to sit around and wait. Jalen Milroe accepted an invite to the green room. And then Daniel Jeremiah has come out and said that he's hearing a lot of buzz and that Cleveland is connected to Jalen Milroe. And then Jordan Schultz came out and said that Cleveland and New Orleans have had private workouts. And they both described those private workouts as impressive. And this is after I have said that, like, I can see how hard he's working from the Senior Bowl to the combine to the pro day. Like, I can see the progression of the things that he's working on. And that's been on record on this podcast of like, he's really honing it in with Jordan Palmer. And not to say that he's going to be great as a rookie or he's going to figure it out, but like, it's very much the Jalen Hurts-esque, like, I'm going to outwork everybody and I'm going to make this work kind of thing.
I'm so glad you said that. I was about to interject and say, like, just, is he Jalen Hurts?
And I think coming off of an Eagles Super Bowl where Jalen Hurts just won a Super Bowl. And again, that's a 99th percentile roster that the Eagles built. It's a 99th percentile roster that they built in Philadelphia around Jalen Hurts. But like, I think some team's going to go for it, man. I mean,
you and I are so locked in on like the quarterback thing that I've never sat down to actually process Jalen Hurts, that player. Just won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And has been to another one.
Yeah. And so, there's a lot of similarities in the way they play the game. Like, mm-hmm. Jalen Hurts does not have a flexible arm. Jalen Hurts has a very linear football, although he throws a really nice deep ball. But he can't layer footballs over the middle of the field. His football is very linear. It's very hard, I guess, is the way to say it. Like, harsh. But he creates windows with his legs. he creates windows by extending plays and happens to be surrounded by one of the best scramble drill wide receivers in the NFL, in my opinion, in Devontae Smith, who just finds his way to the football. He's a magnet to finding his quarterback outside of structure. And he also is surrounded by probably the best deep ball receiver in the NFL as well. So like teams have, like the Eagles built up around his strength. Like and so I think some team's going to fall for it, man. I do. And again, like if the guy's a hard worker, does he have a long way to go? Yes. But if he's a hard worker, dude, like what's like somebody's going to do it. We've talked about how many quarterback holes there are on NFL rosters and there aren't enough veterans out there. And there is one who's going to go first overall and we'll get to the other one who we don't know where is going to go. Like somebody's going to do it.
So for me, I'm not as much looking. Could Pittsburgh be a wild card here?
I think they could.
I can't imagine if he is cognitively, like mentally, leadership wise, work ethic wise, like Jalen Hurts.
Then Mike Tomlin's going to love that dude.
Exactly. That's exactly where I was going with this. Mike Tomlin is going to love him. Mm-hmm. When you look a little bit further down the list, like I could see him turning around and running play action and in a run heavy offense in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have Stafford, but Stafford's 37. He's getting older, so maybe you sit him behind that. I don't know if that roster is there yet to take the future quarterback, but this is a guy you're looking for a runway for Jalen Milroe. Mm-hmm. You do not want him playing right away. You want to fix a lot of the mechanical deficiencies and confidence and cognitive stuff that are going on in his head. Because mm-hmm. like we talked about early in the season, I thought this dude was going to be QB1. Flat out, like
and
that's the potential that gets me thinking that I should draft this. But for me, it's more looking at the top of the second round with Cleveland at 33, with New York if they don't take Shadur at 34. At New Orleans at 40, the Jets at 42. Those are the teams that I'm kind of looking at. Like, could they move up to 29 through 32? Could they even move up to 24? Because at the end of the day, man, Minnesota ain't got picks. and Kwesi, he very much is a younger, new school general manager who I'm sure understands the value of having those darts to throw. Mm-hmm. And those cheap contracts to pay for the next 4 years. So, man.
I look at Denver at 20 as well, man, where they just signed Evan Ingram and they know they want their joker. What if that joker is like Travion Henderson and they don't want to take him at 20? Like, what would it take for Cleveland to come up from 33 to 20? Anything more than a day two pick? Like, that's the kind of stuff that I think about. And then that would be, you fall back to 33 and you take Henderson at 33 like that.
Yeah. And that would be jumping ahead of Pittsburgh as well.
Yeah. So that's the kind of stuff that I think about is like.
My thing with that specifically is that Sean Payton has always been very aggressive in the draft. Mm-hmm. And so a move back that far doesn't seem very Sean Payton like, but maybe. Yeah, maybe. Especially when you have a guy like Henderson staring you in the face. So, dude, as we've been talking about this, I was going to daft this, but the more we discussed it, the more I'm talking myself into drafting it and hating it. But mm-hmm. I do hope, because it's the back end of the first round, that he is able to have a runway. And the nice thing that we've talked about before on this podcast is that even though you don't start him right away, you play him immediately. You get offensive packages for him. He is your inside the 5 yard line quarterback.
Oh yeah.
In my opinion, he has to be, because in that area of the field, I hate teams that line up and shotgun and pass the ball in the deep red zone. Mm-hmm. in the deep red. Run the dang football, and he is a force multiplier in the run game.
I'm kind of different there on you. I agree to just run the football, but I think there are some advantages coming out 2x2. Yeah, I think there's advantages coming out and gunning 2x2, though, and spreading it out a little bit.
Yeah, to run the ball, though.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To run the ball, yes.
For sure, yeah.
Because
I'm not opposed to gun at the goal line.
I'm never about bringing 9 guys into the box on purpose. Absolutely not. No. Let's move on to the second one, man.
Yeah, so I guess the best way to phrase this one, we've kind of workshopped ways to phrase this Shador question here, but after draft, Shador Sanders will fall out of the top 15 picks in the 2025 NFL draft.
Draft.
I think I am too, dude.
I'm going to draft it. I hate it. Here's the thing. Selfishly, I want him to be in the New York media. Because I don't know if a human being has ever been more tailor-made for New York media. It would be absolute fireworks every single week. Every single week. Because he's not insulated by Boulder anymore. And I don't think he needs to be. I think that he's a big boy. I think that he is 97% prime. And I think that is tailor-made to deal with the New York media. So I hope, I pray. And this is saying, like, I call myself a Cowboys fan. I'm barely a fan at all of any NFL team, for sure. But I would love him in that New York market. I think we've talked about his abilities as a passer, like purely as a passer. He deserves to go this high. We want to talk all the other areas and aspects of his game that make you shy away from him and is making the NFL shy away from him a little bit. On top of, I do think the arrogance is a turnoff at the quarterback position for these teams. It's surely starting to seem that way. I kind of personally like it because I'm a fan of personal responsibility. And although I think he might be a little bit of a donkey's ass, he is going to hold his teammates accountable because we've heard that every step of the way in Boulder. So for me, I do. I think, and it partially comes down to, if not New York, then who?
Where?
It's New Orleans, and that's it. And I don't think it's going to be New Orleans because they have so much that they need to do with that roster before they should even think about going franchise quarterback range, because they're not going to be good for a while. They need to tear it down and rebuild it from the studs. Mm-hmm. And you don't start that off with a quarterback.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, I think there's a part of me that thinks the Jets maybe still could, because they could get out of Fields' contract after a year. The Saints make a little bit of sense because, like, they're going to get out from Derek Carr next year, and the way you get out is to get a rookie contract in there. Oh, man, but they have so many holes, like you said. It looks like the top two is kind of locked in with Cam Ward and Travis Hunter right now as well. That's kind of the buzz, is how it's feeling. I don't think the Giants do it. Although the Jameis Winston two-year contract thing makes me think that maybe they could be trying to have their cake and eat it too, where they want to compete with Russ and keep Jameis there to insulate Shador. And then next year he's still there when Russ isn't with Shador. Like, there's part of me that thinks that they might be insulating maybe, but, like, man, that's, I don't know. Like, when I look at it on paper, Atlanta at 15 probably is the quickest somebody could trade up for him. Based on the other teams up there, maybe 14 to Indianapolis, if, like, Tyler Warren, if all of their high athlete targets are off the board. But, like,
I could see Dallas, if they want to go interior offensive line here and go with, like, a Gray Zabel, or go with a Donovan Jackson at guard, maybe. I could see them possibly moving back. We've seen Jerry do it. Jerry did it with Zach, not with Zach Martin, but with Tyler or Travis Frederick moving back to 31. There aren't many spots that we can look at in the top 15 and say those teams should be looking to move back, or could be.
Right. And the question you have to talk about with the Giants, the Browns, those the teams sitting at the top of round two is like, we have talked ad nauseum this year about this quarterback class and how it's not a good quarterback class. Anything inside the top 20, you're probably giving up on next year's one. Is Shedeur Sanders a quarterback worth two of your first round picks? And that's where I think, like, if he falls, he's going to fall into the 20s. And that's where a team is going to say, okay, it's worth a day two pick to come up and get him. But I don't know if some team is going to say he's worth an additional first round pick to come up and get.
Because at the end of the day, as much as we like his ability, like as a quarterback, the physical upside and overall high end playmaking might not be there. It's a little bit like the CJ Stroud discussion, which then you're like, well, CJ Stroud was unbelievable as a rookie and just didn't have the situation in year two to step up in the pocket. But I think there's way less natural physical ability even than CJ Stroud, which is weird to say coming from Deion Sanders as a father. But mm-hmm. I think when you look at it, he wants to survive and live in the pocket. But he doesn't really have the quick juice to get out and make plays, or like the creativity inside the pocket to create from inside of the pocket either. And he still has the bad habit of kind of floating away from pressures. But that's also partially because he's living in a 2-second window in that Colorado offensive line, which also means that he has survived and thrived at the college level in an NFL time window already. So it's like there's so much for me that goes into the Shedeur Sanders projection to the next level that just isn't very much like we normally see from a quarterback at the college level. And so the lack of a clear picture of other guys who have been in a similar situation clouds his projection as well, in my opinion. The biggest thing that I could comp it to a little bit is like Drake May, to where like Drake May didn't have a great offensive line at North Carolina. Drake May, a lot of the time, was getting rid of the ball within 2.5-3 seconds. But Drake May was also a very good processor who got the ball out quickly, didn't hold on to the ball needlessly, had the bozo gene still.
Oh yeah.
But wasn't somebody who looked indecisive or somebody who floated. He got rid of the ball and just made some difficult decisions because of that.
While being a stellar athlete at 6'5",
being 6'5", 225. Yeah, exactly. Which is another thing. Shooter's not very big. So it's that there's so much that goes into clouding his projection to the NFL level that if not New York, I do think he falls out of the top 15.
And that's as somebody who has been adamant that Shedeur Sanders is the best quarterback in this class. And like, that's just the honest like truth about it. Like, do I think next year's quarterback class is better on paper? Yeah, I do. I'm into it a little bit. And it's all guys who are first-year starters with big-time tools. Like, those are the kind of guys that, like, if you could tell me, like, I have a shot to go get one of those guys next year, banking on at least one or two of them developing after their first year, like, to me, that's not worth mortgaging away an initial first-round pick. So, moving on. After draft Dalton. Despite the tight ends class kind of losing its luster based on how we were talking about it mid-season, we had a lot of love for Gunnar Helm, a lot of love for Harold Fannin. Some of that luster's kind of faded. Despite that, and there being the two well-rounded guys at the top, this tight end class still is chock full of really fun role players that will find consistent roles at the NFL level after draft.
1,000%. And every time I go on radio somewhere, I talk about this. It's a really fun class. And we actually just had a conversation in Discord about it kind of last night. I had somebody ask me about Jurecek. The Stanford transfer to Georgia, and then King Kai was talking about some of the other role player guys. Like, I mean, at this point, Fannin is a role player. Let's just call a spade a spade.
I agree, but I think he'd be a really good H-back tight end too, and an offense that wants to flex him out a little bit. Like,
yep, there could be a really good role player there. Mitchell Evans, CJ Dupree, and Terrence Ferguson are the guys that he brought up. And then Jackson Halls, we've talked about him. He was in our superlatives as a blocker as well. Mm-hmm. But that's just getting started in this class. I mean, you have Helm, who was probably going to go day three or should go day three because of the athletic testing. Gadsden, who is a big slot outside guy, like wide receiver, but he's
doming really somebody every McCord game I watch. He's doming somebody.
He's incredible. Brenningstuhl is a good football player as well. Luke Lackey is battled injuries, but he's super smooth as a route runner, and he is not a physically dominant blocker per se, but he's a technically proficient blocker. Bartholomew from Pittsburgh. I mean, there are so many guys as you go through down the list that can play, man. Yeah, there's you're gonna find a role guy here. Fidone from Nebraska is another one. Mm-hmm. You're going to find a role guy. You need
Jalen
a guy.
I think Jalen Conyers has like a low key. This guy could be a tight end one in the right. Like if he like develops appropriately,
low end. I think like a low end athletic. Yeah. You throw a dart at him. Yes.
Like that's another one
day three. Yeah. And then that's not even talking about Warren and Loveland and Mason Taylor and Elijah Arroyo as well. And so, yeah, man, we just rattled off like 15 guys who could have roles. And we're usually talking about tight ends, the top five, and that's it. Because that's just the way the tight end works, especially at the college level where college offenses, they just don't feature the position. And I think guys like Jurecek really got hurt by losing Todd Monken. I mean, how much more often would he have gotten the ball? How much better would that offense have looked if Monken was still around? Maybe
we would have stayed at Stanford.
Yeah.
Well, that program kind of stunk too, but yeah.
But yeah, man, this tight end class is freaking awesome.
Yeah, I agree. Again, I'm not as bullish on Arroyo. One, like this is the first year he stayed healthy his entire career. Two, like he never played in line. So I do think he's still more of a role player, but like those kind of role players, they get drafted high. Evan Engram went in the first round. Evan Engram's made a Pro Bowl. Like that guy's not playing in line. So I think there's a pathway for Arroyo, pathway for Fannin, as I mentioned. Like I think if you're looking for a tight end two flex H-back who can play some big slot, who can also motion to the backfield, I think he's your ideal target there. I was like, even looking, you talked about Jackson Hall, like Maliki Mataval from UCLA is that same Jackson. Like if you just want a 13 personnel guy, who's just going to come in and be an ass kicker, like Brock Wright, like Coe Keeft, like those kind of players at the NFL level, like you can find one of those and probably draft them in the sixth or seventh round and get them. If you want a true F, we mentioned Aronde Gadsden. I think Aronde Gadsden is a really stellar true F. There aren't a lot of Fs in this class though. Arroyo and Gadsden are probably the only two like guys I would, maybe Terrence Ferguson a little bit, but again, I don't see the high end athleticism that he tests with on tape very much. So I think maybe F is where the class might be a little bit weak. I mean, Loveland obviously is at the top there, but you know, you got a guy like Joshua Simon. If you miss out on Harold Fannin, come back and get Joshua Simon day three. That guy's an H-back all day, like from South Carolina and a pretty good player. Like I think he's a pretty decent little player. So you can find, if you want to take the elder statesman, it is an H-back as well. Brent Keithy's been around for 8 years. So if
yes,
you want to do that, but
that was another name. That was actually another name that King Kai brought up on Discord as well.
But that's to say there's a lot of names out there, and Rivaldo Fairweather, maybe a PFA late round F shot. You want to throw Rivaldo Fairweather there from Auburn as well. Like, so there are options in almost every round, every role, every round in this tight end class. So yeah, it's a good group. It's a good group.
It is. And let's talk about another good group of players who do not get talked about enough. Okay. And I bring this question up because the mock draft simulator on Pro Football Network has Jalen Royals as the 57th ranked player, Jaden Higgins as the 65th ranked player, and Jack Besh as the 74th ranked player on their board. And their board is as predictive as it is how they feel about the players. So three guys not talked about as much as those three guys: Elik Ayumanner from Stanford, Torrey Horton from Colorado State, and Ty Felton from Maryland. Those three players, Ayumanner, Horton, and Felton, will combine to have more impact at the NFL level than Jalen Royals, Jaden Higgins, and Jack Besh. Do you draft this or do you draft this, Corey?
I think I'm gonna draft it. And it's because I think those three players are more universally able to plug in than two of the three names of Higgins, Royals, and Besh. I think Royals, you could probably plug in and play wherever you wanted to in the slot, X, Z, but like Higgins is a Z, or he's an X. Like he's not doing anything else but playing X. And Besh, you have to be a little bit creative with how you want to get Besh the football and how you want to get him on the field and how you want to get him isolated and how you want to get him into space. As fun of a player as he is, like there's a reason he didn't run a 40-yard dash this pre-draft process. Besh, people want to comp him to Puka Nacua, and I get it.
Sure, it's one of those things.
McVay drafts him, but like, I have a hard time envisioning how 26 play callers in the NFL utilize Jack Besh. Like that's kind of where
it's one of those things with Besh where it's just like he just seems like a damn good football player. Like and you can't really the problem with us is like you can't just quantify that. You can't, because when we watch it, it's like it's not really winning. Mm-hmm. And like you want to be able to see that natural separation. But the body control is kind of there, but the body control isn't there like Puka Nacua. Mm-hmm. And he isn't as physical as somebody like an Xavier Restrepo to play the Cooper Kupp role as like a blocker. And so like, you're right. Like what is the NFL fit? And at the end of the day, you're right. He didn't run for a reason because he's not fast. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. You can survive if you run a 4.6, but we have seen, especially recently, historically, guys who can't dip into that 4.5 range are not having success at the NFL level anymore. Mm-hmm. They just aren't. It's
no matter how productive you are at the college level. Yeah.
It is a different game built around speed. Now, I'm going to let you get in on Jaden Higgins a little bit before I give my after draft here, but you go ahead.
So yeah, I haven't even talked about the other three receivers on the other side of this equation either. Dude, I don't think Jaden Higgins can separate. I know what the testing numbers say, but like that dude's always got a body on him on tape. I think that he can run 40% of the route tree. I don't know how fluid of an athlete he is. I know what the testing numbers say. I'm telling you on tape, like there's always a body on his back. Always a body on his back, and that really scares me. Really scares me. Some team might take him round one. Some team might take him top 40. Like that would terrify me. To me, he has the profile of a guy that's like a third round receiver. Yeah, Jaden Higgins.
I mean, that's where I have him. That's where I think he is. And I just wanted to bring up, you were talking about having guys on his back and things like that. I think he is incredibly interesting to me because I see some really nice fluidity and efficiency on in and out breaking routes. Mm-hmm. On the vertical plane, I don't think he stacks very well. And he cannot come. He absolutely positively cannot come back to the football right now. And so you're right. He's got like 40% of the route tree. The problem is when you only have physically or in your setup, your ability to manipulate defenders, if you only have 40% of the route tree, that's only 40% that the defender has to worry about. And so that makes that 40% that much harder. Now we're talking about NFL level corners who are better. And we saw Andre Sisco talking about this when he was talking about Shedeur Sanders and the ability to like jump on passes when guys are padding the football. He was watching a pro day, for God's sakes, but whatever. They're better. And you're not going to be able to separate that same way. And so as smooth and as fluid as he is in that horizontal plane, it doesn't show up coming back to the football, and he doesn't have the pure juice or manipulative ability to continuously stack downfield. Mm-hmm. That makes life really tough at the NFL level, even with the catch radius that you had him for with superlatives.
Yes. And, yeah, for sure. There's something about big receivers who don't play big that I just really struggle with. We've talked about with Tet quite a bit too. And that's honestly why I honestly don't love Elik Ayinmunar that much either, because I think he tries to play like he's 6 foot, 200 pounds. And it's like, outside of that Colorado game where he, like, Travis Hunter might still have nightmares about that game, like, he doesn't play big. He wants to be a shifty guy. He won't play, like, he really struggles to play through contact over the middle of the field. So it's like, I don't know what to do with Ayinmunar either, but I think a team will love him because he can block his ass off. And I think you can get him the football a little more creatively than some of these other guys. And he is a fluid athlete, so I do think he can move pretty well at his side. Like, he's another one of those guys that's just like, you don't do the things that I think you should do, and you do the things I don't think you should be able to do. So he's a weird receiver for me. Torrey Horton's just a solid pro, dude. Like, you can't tell me that guy's not going to go somewhere, be a wide receiver 3-4 in the back of a room and have like 500, 600 yards a season. Like, and then I think Ty Felt might be the most slept on wide receiver in this class. Just flat out think he might be the most slept on receiver in this class.
Yeah. And we'll finally get to my answer here, because I've been sitting on it, but I'm 100% drafting this, 100% drafting it. And it's because I think Ayinmunar has a more NFL built skill set than Higgins at this point in what the NFL is asking guys to do. And he will have a quarterback who can actually throw the football at a Division I level, throwing him the football at the NFL level. Torrey Horton is the reason why I'm drafting this by a million. And it's very, very easy for me. And it's because he would be absolutely talked about in the earlier day two discussion if he wouldn't have played like three games this year. He is a phenomenal football player. Very much in that, like, Michael Gallup at Colorado State range of player. I mean, the tape was really, really good. Now, Gallup ended up having a different role at the NFL level, and this is what Corey was talking about with just the versatility of this second crop of players in Ayinmunar, Horton and Felton, comparatively to Higgins, Beck, and Royals. And he talked about Royals being a little bit more of an all-around guy, and I agree with that because I think that you can move him around the offense a lot more. But when you're looking at Horton and Felton, Horton is a guy who was a ball magnet, was my ball magnet in superlatives going into the season, because he would have games of 20 plus targets, 15 plus targets consistently at Colorado State. And then Ty Felton had the third most targets in college football this year. These are guys who command the football. And Ty Felton specifically, man, is somebody who, Corey talked about it, might be the most underrated receiver in this class. He's long, he's lean, he is explosive, but he is a true three-level threat with his ability to move. We've talked about it in the past. In my opinion, he is everything that you want in an NFL Z receiver, and a team is going to get really, really gifted with his presence on day two. And I don't know if this is where the NFL sees these players or where they get drafted. I just saw a very interesting group of guys in that PFN mock draft simulator, and then a group of guys who I like more underneath. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how the NFL sees it overall. That's all we got for today. Corey is having some technical issues here on his end. So we are going to end the podcast with my voice. Corey obviously loves you guys. I obviously love you guys. And we will be back with the defensive side of the ball, the Frankensteins. And we are building the Frankenstein of all Frankensteins, because there isn't a position that is more athletically gifted than the edge rushers heading into the NFL level. We are going to build a pass rusher for the next episode. Make sure you're tuning into the Daft on Draft podcast. As always, I love you guys. Goodbye.